When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Of course, we got a massive game tonight. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Somebody wake up Al Michaels, because this is going to be a good one. You got the Green Bay Packers going to Detroit to face the Lions. It's going to be awesome. Because there's a lot on the line. Not only are these two teams very good, Pearl, but you know, the Lions, I think, because they're 11-1, right, is the latest record. They do not have the division locked up at all. And it's not just the Packers. The Minnesota Vikings are also lurking, and the Lions' schedule gets pretty difficult after this. So it's massive for them. For Green Bay, who could be anywhere from the 7th seed to the 1 seed. I mean, they've got everything to play for. And it's, again, more questions about both of these teams. What do they do in big games? Because we saw them play well in the playoffs last year, but obviously have heartbreaking losses. How do they respond to them? Clearly, the regular season has not been much of an issue, but when these games get really tight, how do they respond?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's so predictable. They both almost beat San Francisco in identical ways last year, and it feels like they're both going to be in the exact same spot this year, where Green Bay, I think you look at the NFC, it really feels to me like a three-team race. The Eagles, the Packers, and the Lions. And it almost matters matchups, like who gets to see each other first. I think the Lions are clearly the favorite, but I don't guarantee that the Packers couldn't beat them because they're going to play three times, possibly.
Possibly, yep.
I mean, tonight, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they split and then the Lions got an edge. But beating the Packers twice in the regular season means they might have to beat them a third time. So Packers are going to be there. They're a good team. They're kind of like a light version of the Detroit Lions. Great offensive line, good run game, quarterback who will give it away a lot, who's good, but will throw interceptions. I just think it's a really interesting matchup. They're very close. I would just say, to me, and tell me if you view it this way, the Lions are just like 8% better than the Packers.
Maybe something like that. Yeah. Maybe I trust the receivers just a tiny bit more. But
that's what the line you would go like. Amon-Ra's pretty darn good.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, the other part too is I think home field advantage really matters here. And I understand that the Lions went to Lambeau earlier this season and beat the Packers by 10. But I think the Lions want. Not that they're a soft team, not at all. In fact, the opposite. But to play indoors, I mean, that's huge. And to have everyone come to you, it's kind of the opposite of way I feel about maybe the Bills or even the Chiefs. It's like, I think they really do want the home field advantage.
But funny thing is, the Packers are...
They want the outside advantage, excuse me.
Yeah, the Packers should want to go to Lambeau, but the recent history, they've been terrible at Lambeau in the playoffs.
Well, that was with Rodgers, though.
Yeah, but Jordan Love looks even more warm weather. I'm like, I've seen Jordan Love play. I want that guy indoors, too. He didn't look great. The last time they played, it was yucky out, and he didn't look like he was comfortable. He's a California kid as well. So I'm not sure that makes – I don't mind Green Bay going to Detroit. That doesn't mean – to me, that's not like the end-all to be-all. You know where you don't want to go is Philly. I'd rather – that's the one home field I think that really matters more than Detroit. Because Detroit we saw played really well at San Francisco. EJ pointed this out to me yesterday. Like, they played their A game on grass in San Francisco, so they can play anywhere.
855-212-4227. We'll continue to talk about this game throughout the morning. Lomas Brown is going to join us at the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, he does the color analyst for the Lions games, and he also won a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Bucks and playing for John Gruden. And, you know, it's funny because John Gruden's name is back in the coaching ranks, like coaching carousel, you know, like John Gruden's name keeps popping up. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that John Gruden was going to have to go back to college, maybe to try to find his way back to the NFL. Doesn't look like that's the case.
Are we sure?
Well,
I know his name is out there, and I think like he's putting it out there, and I know he's working for Barstool now. I think it's a big leap to actually hire him because of the litigation and all that other stuff.
Well, not just that, but we found out what was in some unsavory emails. Now, listen, that's his private correspondence. You could say it should have never been out there, but the fact of the matter is it's out there. And he definitely said some racist and homophobic things in those emails. And so how does that work walking back into a locker room? These are all good questions for Lomas Brown. We'll ask him later. But speaking of coaches and coaching carousel, this one really caught our attention yesterday, and this is for all of our friends and listeners in California and the whole West Coast. Apparently, UCF, University of Central Florida, has checked in and inquired about whether or not Lincoln Riley is available to be poached away from USC. The fact that UCF thinks that they can pluck away Lincoln Riley is a bad sign for Lincoln Riley. And we know that this has been a terrible season, embattled. You know, he has not lived up to the hype of what USC thought they were getting with Lincoln Riley, Perloff. But USC is still, despite all the issues they've had, still one of the marquee programs of college football. Just had the Heisman Trophy winner and Caleb Williams not long ago. UCF is an up-and-coming program. People who really know college football know UCF is always a sleeping giant and a good program. But they're not on the same level. And that's not a disrespect to UCF. UCF would say that. So the fact that UCF thinks that they could get Lincoln Riley, don't you think that's a huge indictment on where Lincoln Riley is right now with the Trojans?
Well, yeah, but I don't think it's because of UCF thing. I think the fact that they had a terrible season is the bigger indictment. I mean, by the way, USC famously cheaps out a coach. Lincoln Riley was a rare exception. I mean, they stuck with Clay Helton forever. And they brought in Sark and Lane Kiffin. Those guys were all cheap when they brought them in. They don't like to pay for coaches, so they put out this big money. I think Lincoln's top five in salary. It hasn't worked out at all. I mean, the UCF thing, to me, it's just like, is USC done?
Is USC maybe putting it out there, hey, would be willing to talk about getting rid of Lincoln Riley? Okay, so we have some sound from Lincoln Riley. Here is the head coach of USC talking about his future.
I tell him I'm a USC Trojan, man. I'm at the place I want to be. So it's a non-starter. It's a non-issue. I'm home.
Well, I don't think he gets to decide that, right?
There's a lot of money tied into him. So, like, I read the UCF report. Wouldn't it be great for USC that if he volunteered and left? Like, they'd probably like that. Because otherwise, I think the money's a problem.
Listen, I'm sure it is. And I think these buyouts for coaches outside of Texas A&M, which did the biggest buyout in history to get Jimbo Fisher out, I think it played a part in Florida keeping Billy Napier. I think it will play a part in Brian Kelly staying at LSU. I do think the buyouts, Ryan Day maybe at Ohio State, I do think the buyout's a factor because now you got to pay for players because the biggest grift of all time of not paying college players is over, and now you got to actually pay the roster.
But the school pays the buyout. The boosters pay the players.
Just in general, though, right? Like,
yeah,
you need to
hear you.
There's money that
could
be better spent.
The former UCF coach, Gus Malzahn, got ahead of time the record buyout from Auburn.
He did. Now he's going to be the offensive coordinator of Florida State.
Yeah.
But here's,
I don't think the buyout is... I think you actually hit on something. I don't think USC wants to pay another coach. I think they're going to keep Lincoln Riley.
And he just gets to stay. But meanwhile,
did lose their Heisman Trophy winner, and they were not a top 10 preseason team. Like, it's a disappointing season, but nobody thought this team was a contender. My bigger issue is, like, they seem specifically ill-prepared to play Big Ten football. Like, this is going to be an impossible transition. Reminds you when Nebraska went to the Big Ten. Like, this is not good. This is not, I don't feel hopeful if I'm a USC fan. Lincoln Riley does not feel like a Big Ten coach. Like, all the bad things we kind of thought might happen with USC going to play these other teams is happening.
Well, they clearly need to take a page from what Steve Sarkisian did at Texas and what Dan Lanning did at Oregon, which is if you're going to take a step up in conference with Texas going to the SEC and Oregon going to the Big Ten, you've got to be building on your offensive and defensive lines. That's the difference. I mean, the fact that Lincoln Riley, you know, does he need to literally have the Heisman Trophy winner in order to be anywhere successful? The guy was a quarterback kingmaker. Couldn't, you know,
well, that's a point.
He should be able to coach these guys up. Does it have to be the level of you're the greatest player in college football in order for them to have a prayer?
Isn't that sort of the genesis of spread football, though, is that if you don't have, you know, when Art Briles and those guys in Texas invented spread, it's because, like, our line's not great, so we're going to spread out and we're going to hit you so they don't have to block that much. That's why the NFL has no idea if linemen are good in college. Like, you should be able to overcome that. The problem has been defense, and, like, they just can't.
Yeah,
they just can't fix it. And then they probably need a new quarterback next year. I know they have some five-star kids somewhere, but they don't really have like a surefire superstar. There's no next Caleb Williams.
Yeah, but see, that's to me, like, that should be the easiest thing to solve for Lincoln Riley. All you have to do is just show the resume of all the guys that he has coached who have either won the Heisman, gone number one overall in the draft, or both.
Right, but who's he going to show that to next? Like, who is the target? I don't think there's another Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield for him to grab.
There's always another guy.
Yeah.
There's always another guy, because who thought that Jalen Hurts was going to be available and Lincoln Riley took him after Alabama and then to Oklahoma.
So they bench Miller Moss for Jaden Maiva, and he's okay, but I think he needs to upgrade a little bit there. I'm not sure that's so easy. He had such a high bar. I think we had this idea of, oh, it's Lincoln Riley. He'll just get the next Heisman Trophy winner, number one overall pick. It's easy. Maybe it's not that easy.
So this is funny, right? Because we were talking about this last night because it definitely caught our attention. If UCF, University of Central Florida, inquired about Lincoln Riley, like he's going to be available, that USC would cut ties. And EJ, your thought was that Lincoln Riley should make this move because USC is damaging his reputation so bad that this could be a way to save it. I just don't see how this is not lateral, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to UCF, but this is not a lateral move. This is a downgrade, a downshift. How could this save his reputation? I think it hurts it even more.
Well, Lincoln Riley at one point was the absolute golden boy of college football. I mean, when he was at Oklahoma, the reason why he went to USC was so shocking because this was a guy who was considered either to stay at Oklahoma forever, which is kind of the stuff he was saying. He seemed to be really happy there.
Yeah, they all say that.
Or that he was going to go to the NFL. Like, that's what we were looking at. And now you look at Lincoln Riley and his stock. I don't think any NFL team would consider him as a head coach. And I think a lot of these big programs that we're talking about, you know, a Florida saying, like, what do we do? A Florida State, what do we do? Like, they don't love their coaches, but Lincoln Riley, you would think, would be a guy that if he's out there, maybe you'd want to get. And you don't hear anything about those guys wanting him. So to me, I look at him and I'm like, man, if you stay at USC, you're probably 2 or 3 years away from being fired. I think that's just the reality.
Okay.
I agree, Perloff. They're not going to rise through the standings in the Big Ten. And it doesn't seem like he's able to recruit the kind of players necessary to become a consistent team. They can score points every now and then. They can have a nice explosive offense or a good quarterback. But are they going to be able to really win games, win 10, 11 games necessary to make the playoffs? I don't see that. So my thing is, get out now. Go to a better fit where maybe, you know, you can go to, I don't know if it's UCF, but maybe it's one of these other Big 12 schools where you're more familiar with how they play. And you can go out there and win 10 games, 11 games, and easily get to the playoffs.
Right, because you have to win the game 56-48 or whatever.
He could be great in that situation.
So here's the one thing, though. You said that you don't think the NFL is happening. I wouldn't be so sure about that. Cliff Kingsbury got hired with a losing record in college because he had a tie to the quarterback. I think Lincoln Riley is possibly in play for the Chicago Bears because of the relationship with Caleb Williams. Even if he doesn't have, and listen, Lincoln Riley does have a good record in Oklahoma, made the playoff, and he actually did have a 10-win season with Caleb the first year at USC. I'm not sure the NFL is off the table for him.
Well, how about as an OC in the NFL? Just a possibility.
Do the Chip Kelly thing where you go from being a head coach to an offensive coordinator?
Yeah, a lot of guys
Jeff
do that.
Jeff Hafley,
like two or three guys went from head coach to offensive coordinator. And then again, it'd almost be like you were getting fired from you. Obviously, if you can keep the USC job, you're going to do that. But maybe even be Cliff's offensive coordinator, which doesn't make any sense because why would you want those two guys?
Well, Cliff was with Lincoln Riley last year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cliff worked for Lincoln Riley. So maybe they flip up.
He was supposed to be the OC.
Yeah.
And then he went to the NFL. Like, it was a shock. That was before, obviously, this was when Lincoln wasn't there. But he became went from being OC in college to a head coach in the NFL. And just quickly on Cliff, I think it's slightly different because I think with Cliff, you looked at that team and said, okay, he's doing kind of more with less. It's Texas Tech. We know they don't have any defense. We know they're outgunned against Texas and Oklahoma. But look at all the yards they're putting up. Look at all the passing stats. If we put him on a good team, maybe he could be cutting edge. There's nothing cutting edge, I think, about Lincoln Riley right now.
There used to be, though.
Yes, there used to be. I'm saying right now, today, I don't think you look at him and say, oh, he's one of like the godfathers of new age college football or offensive football. I think you look at him and not a dinosaur, but I think you look at him and he's like, all right, maybe he's kind of old news.
Lincoln Riley? That's amazing.
Here's the thing, though.
Yeah, in offensive football right now.
But think about it. Is also like football maybe in the SEC and the Big Ten is kind of changing things, you know? Like, you mentioned it. How do you win in the Big Ten? It's a little bit more smash mouth, you know?
Yeah, even Ohio State with all those stars is not able to get up a lot of points because you're playing really tough defenses.
And I think even maybe you see it a little bit with the SEC about coming back to the pack a little, making it a little bit more about defense. I mean, look what we just saw with Texas A&M playing Texas. Yep. The final score was 17-7.
I mean, let's be honest. Is it quite as simple as the weather? You know, I like to talk about the weather. I mean, is USC really going to go into Minnesota, Purdue, and Michigan and win consistently?
Well, unfortunately, they lost to Penn State at home. Yeah. And some of the others.
Well, I think
Notre Dame at home.
I think they lost at Minnesota. Not that it was cold yet, but this is just doesn't seem like a perfect fit. Like, I like your idea of going tail between your legs back to the Big 12 makes a lot of sense. Like, that's like, remember everyone thought Lincoln Riley, there was two things that were working against Lincoln Riley. Everyone thought that he was winning with Stoops' players, and that turns out to be true, and that he was afraid of the SEC, and that's why he left Oklahoma. And as it turned out, he should have been afraid of the Big Ten, too. I like that idea of getting back to the Big 12 eventually. He feels like a Big 12 coach.
Why don't he and Dion just flip places?
Well, I was thinking a different school and go back to your old state. And
do you believe that?
Go to Oklahoma State.
Yeah,
I don't know. Mike Gundy's so entrenched there.
They'll get rid of Mike Gundy in a heartbeat to get Lincoln Riley.
I think it's hard to win at USC. I don't think that is as easy as people are making it seem. Like, it's a long time since the Bush push.
But at the same time, you would think USC, with all those Southern California athletes, like you should have better players besides just the quarterback. Like, you should have a star wide receiver, a star running back. Like, there are so many. Like, that is where you want to get skilled players.
Yeah, well, you paid for Addison.
But here's the thing. It's not like you're that far away from having great players. I mean, the wide receiver room with Drake London in it, people think that might be one of the great wide receiver rooms, remember? Michael Pittman, Drake London. I forgot who else was in that.
I don't think he was there, though, yet.
Who, Lincoln? No, Lincoln wasn't there.
I'm just saying
USC.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that they don't have access to skill position players.
But if you look at I'll be honest. If you look at like a mock draft, you don't see a lot of USC.
Yep.
And I don't think they don't produce like the SEC, like LSU and Alabama and Georgia. I mean, they for some reason I don't. The other thing, like, do they really want to pay to play in this game right now? They did spend some money on their defensive coaching staff. I know that, but I don't know about that program. And doesn't seem like the marriage of, but you said it, EJ, if they get the right transfer quarterback and he creates another Kyler Murray, is it possible that he gets right back there?
I just think it's funny, too, to talk about USC not having any money, because it's like a glamour type of program. I mean, celebrities and how many used to be on the sidelines. Like, you would not think that money would be hard to raise around there.
I don't think it's not that they don't have any money. I just think that they've always been kind of conservative for some reason.
I think they're kind of a front runner organization too, where I think it's similar to Miami in the sense where like when they start winning, then the money comes in. Then the entrance comes in. It's LA. There's so many things going on.
Like, I don't think USC football team to USC is like LSU football to LSU. I think you nailed it exactly, Jay. I think there's a lot going on there. You know, there's a lot of Hollywood. There's a lot of rich kids. It's so hard to get into now. I'm not sure that football program is the primary purpose of the college.
No, they were funneling all that money to the fencing team or the rowing team or whatever, right, to get Full House's daughter into. I'm trying to remember the details of that scandal. Yeah. Operation Varsity Blues.
Oh, yeah.
Lori Loughlin.
Yeah.
The mom on Full House. Married to Jesse, obviously. And what did they paid the rowing team, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, they were paying.
They were funneling.
I think it was the rowing team.
Yeah. Money to the rowing coach to get her daughter in.
Right. Now we're getting into a totally different subject.
Yeah, that's just a
The fake pictures where you just Photoshop your daughter into a boat pretending to row.
That was maybe the beginning of NIL.
They really should have gotten our own Andrew Kaplan for that. Maybe they wouldn't have gotten caught. Photoshop skills are elite. 855-212-4227. Okay. You're welcome to weigh in on USC Lincoln Riley. We know we have a big audience on the West Coast. Let us know what you think about this coaching carousel. Coming up next, we're going to talk to legendary broadcaster, someone who has interviewed all of the biggest names in sports. Chris Myers has a new book out. We're going to talk to him next. Excited to pick the brain of one of sports' great, great voices next.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. A few minutes, we'll be talking to Chris Myers, veteran broadcaster, has a book. Incredible stories in it. Can't wait. Of course, old friend of mine.
I assumed.
No, not really. I've met him a couple times. Super nice guy. But yeah.
Well, he and Dan Patrick.
Yeah, like any connection to DP. Oh my God. Yeah, I'm sure those two guys know stories about each other that we're probably not safe for air.
We'll spill them all in just a matter of minutes.
I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate on our show. Give us your best Dan Patrick after hours story.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you ever want to talk to Dan again? No, I'm just kidding.
No. I'm sure in the 90s they probably had a fun at a bar at some point. But anyway, that's not the point. But first, here's some updates.
You're throwing to me?
I'm throwing to you.
I don't know how to handle that.
Well, are you going to have a dirty video to talk about?
Fingers crossed.
This is Bogus's new cottage industry, is finding the most inappropriate videos on the internet, which is a lot.
That's hard to do.
Yeah,
hey, boys. I am intrigued by this woman possibly being a serial kiss cam ruiner if she went from Denver to Sacramento, like EJ might believe.
Yeah, this was a lady got caught on the Sacramento Kings kiss cam. Yeah,
you don't know how to use the word caught. She didn't get caught. She did this on purpose.
Yes, I'm sorry. They panned over to her, and rather than just do peck on the cheek or even the fake makeout or the real makeout or whatever people do, she decided to go directly to the obscene.
Ah, Sacktown.
My favorite is when that camera, when they show a kid doing like a dance, like the Running Man. And he's really good, and everyone's like, "Oh, yeah!" Everyone cheers. Then they go back, and then they come back to the kid because he's so good at the Running Man, and they show like 8 minutes of him. I definitely want to be a director of a kiss cam someday.
The Jumbotron,
or whatever. Mm. Like, yeah, I think it's fascinating. If you've been to an NBA game, like, nobody's paying attention to what's happening on the court. The t-shirt cannons and the kiss cams, that's what the entire event is about.
Yeah, how many Anthony Edwards dunks do we need to have for people to pay attention? Although, I can just see like a future down the road when they eventually do the Maggie and Perloff documentary, right? Because everyone gets a doc, and because the show means so much, I can imagine we would get the documentary treatment. And, you know, after we've been in the Radio Hall of Fame and all the amazing things that happened to everyone on the show, I can imagine they're doing a mockumentary or documentary. Like, so, and where did Perloff go once he was done with the groundbreaking Maggie Perloff show? He's like, he realized his true calling, and he went to become the Jumbotron operator at the Wells Fargo Center.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to that little kid doing the gritty. All right.
Now me doing the gritty.
Look at that old man. Yeah.
Picking his nose.
Yeah. Oh, he's doing that move where you pretend you're the sprinkler. Let's do that one, that guy.
I got a third base situation on camera two. Cut there. Camera two.
This is where Perloff will be someday.
I don't even really want to be in the Radio Hall of Fame. I did one night of that. It's a long night.
You don't want to go because of the ceremony?
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, sure.
Men's college basketball is getting a new number one.
It's been Jay's determination, Jay's courage, Jay's strength, and Jay's win! Jay's win! Jay's win! And storm the floor in Omaha!
Those are the Blue Jays of unranked Creighton taking down top-ranked Kansas last night, 76-63. Greg McDermott's program beat number one UConn in Omaha last February.
What can you say? This is the building number one teams go to die, evidently.
That was Coach postgame on FS1. Those current Huskies got back on track last night with a 76-72 home win over number 15 Baylor. The Celtics have won 9-10 after outscoring Detroit last night, 130-120. Guys, back to you.
Bogus, thank you so much. We turn now to an award-winning broadcaster, someone who has been there to chronicle some of the greatest and at times tragic moments throughout sports, happy and sad. He's done it all. Chris Myers joins us. He's got a new book out. The book is called That Deserves a Wow. Of course, Chris, one of your famous catchphrases. Thank you so much for the time. Congrats on the book. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning to you guys. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Chris, I told Maggie a story yesterday. You will not remember this, but I met you for the first time when I was part of the Dan Patrick Show crew in 2009.
We were at a Super Bowl party.
Super Bowl party, yes. Okay, so you do remember. Except you were on the inside of the velvet rope, and I was on the outside of the velvet rope. And me and the Danettes, who are not famous yet, me and Paulie and Seton walk up, and you were having a nice conversation. Like, oh, great to see you. How are you guys doing? How's the family? And then, like, Chris, can you help us get in? And you're like, I have a lot of pull here, but not that much pull. And then you turn around.
So I didn't get you guys in?
I think you did.
The jaws of life couldn't have gotten them in,
did,
Chris.
But when we asked you to let us in, you almost like laughed to yourself and said, boys, I love you, but I'm not all powerful here.
I think ultimately you got in, though.
We had a very good time. We hung out. Yeah. No, you were very friendly. But I can't believe you remember. It was Miami. I had to look it up. It was a great time.
Right.
Yeah.
My hometown. I should have had more pull there, but I'd been away for a while, so...
You know what, Chris, you mentioned your hometown a lot and your connections to Florida in this book, That Deserves a Wow. And one thing that stood out to me, and I didn't know this about you, that you actually did a little stand-up comedy when you were in Florida. Did you have a joke? Like, what was your go-to, this one's going to bring the house down joke?
I talked a lot of the things that I talked about then were growing up in a mixed neighborhood, growing up Catholic, the differences there. It was the comic strip in Fort Lauderdale and later in New Orleans at the Faux Pas Comedy Club. Actually, when I was doing local sports there, I just kind of did that on the side. But I don't really, it's funny, I don't really remember. Some of it was based on coming from a big family and that type of thing. So it was that kind of humor. Obviously, a lot of it didn't work. I might still be doing it, but I did love the interaction with the live audience. And having a sense of humor, obviously, is something that I think is important to whatever you do.
You know, Chris, one thing that's always impressed me about SportsCenter and ESPN, that you guys wrote your own show, that you and Dan and everybody, maybe that kind of thing trained you for that. Like, how hard was that to actually, back in the day, sort of do your own script on the fly? That seems impossible to me.
Yeah, it was a great atmosphere. Well, we had help from people behind the scenes. Hire young people out of college who would, you know, do highlight shot sheets. So a lot of the shows were highlights. We'd write lead-ins based on what, you know, we made it seem current, like this was the setup coming in. And even if we knew the game was over, they'd run in, give us a shot sheet, and give us the basic shots, and then we'd have to ad-lib on the fly. But the writing, it was a great atmosphere there in the center, at least we used to, back in the 90s, the growth years of ESPN, and we would, sit there and watch the games and write and talk and interact and yell at, you know, if you represented a team or that, you were a fan of that team, and that was kind of fun. So it created, you kind of connected with the audience, I think. So in a sense, it was easy writing. That's actually what led, you know, when Dan and I got the call from Bill Murray to come down to New York for the ESPYs, that was kind of the connection there. It was because there were a bunch of writers, comedy writers in the room working on the ESPYs, and Bill Murray was saying, you know what, no thanks, guys. You know, we don't need you for this. Dan and Chris write their own material. We'll have them join us. And that's kind of how that began. And Bill had a funny segment on the ESPYs with SportsCenter. It was, I think, the second actual ESPYs that happened.
And that's an incredible story because Bill Murray just means so much to all of us. I know how much he means to you. He writes the foreword in your book, That Deserves a Wow, which you can buy now. You know, Perloff and I had a question about Bill Murray because he's so reclusive at times.
Yes.
You know, how do you find Bill Murray? Even if you know him or you meet him, do you have his personal number? Like, how do you get to Bill?
Yeah, Maggie, he just you get it. You get the number, but if he either calls you back or he doesn't, and they now they use a voicemail. There used to not be a voicemail, but even his own family, you know, that's the others I got along with. He comes from a big family, so do I. I met all his brothers. We hang out in golf tournaments and things like that. And he shows up, but he is reliable. If he says he'll be there to do something, whether it was an up-close interview or eventually write the foreword or do a radio hit or something, he eventually, you just like, Bill, are you coming? Are you sure? We need to set that. Don't worry. No, I said I'll do it. And all of a sudden he's there through a side door or a parachute or something. like he arrives on the Letterman show. You know, that's how it feels. But he is a lot of fun. But I also, you know, there's some funny stories in there and not invading anyone's privacy here, but there's also a sensitive side. I mean, he's an astute sports fan. He could almost be an analyst for golf or baseball and call out a game. But there's a caring side of him that was beneficial to me through the years and actually gave me some good advice on the O.J. Simpson interview, the famous interview with Todd. You know, Todd from the Danettes, who was part of booking that first live interview. So it's a unique friendship, one I would have never saw coming when it started out. However, he's the kind of guy you would want to hang out with, even if he wasn't famous in movies or entertainment.
Wait, Chris, what is the advice that Bill Murray gave you before you sat down for that famous interview with O.J. Simpson after O.J. had been acquitted?
Well, there were two pieces of advice. One was some people thought we shouldn't do it because the people were upset. They thought we were going to be glorifying a killer. And to me, as a little waiver, I mean, even O.J. Simpson's lawyer, one that defended him, told me ahead of time when he heard I was doing it. I ran into him somewhere out in Southern California, and he said, you know what, don't everything. So you defended him. He said, well, anything attached to him is negative. I wouldn't do it. So people thought it might hurt the career, but I just thought that we could ask the questions. It was important. We could ask if he had taken the stand, and we have him live. And so we had, but Bill said, so I was talking to him, and he said, no, you got to do it. You know, and John Walsh, our editor at ESPN, backed us on this, but Bill's like, you go for it. And then the other thing is, as I was preparing in a limited amount of time, I'm talking to lawyers and police detectives and looking, I saw evidence, photos that even the jury didn't get to see in the initial murder trial. OJ turned the interview down with Barbara Walters because she would only tape it. He didn't want somebody editing it because he thought it might make him look guilty or even more guilty. So it had to be live. Mm. So with a live interview, people thought he would spin his stories and make you look stupid. And so Bill said, and I was a little concerned about that. Bill said, there's a book called, and I think I got the title right, it's in called How to Speak to Your Children So They'll Listen to You and How to Listen So Your Children Will Speak to You, something like that. And that was so that there's an understanding of the way, because his speech, he thought OJ would do that type of those types of lies, I guess, or denial. And it was very helpful, actually, in a very pedestrian, elementary kind of way for me in that live interview.
You know, Chris, I couldn't put the book down. I love the stories. To me, the tough interviews are interesting. The Mike Tyson interview where Tyson gets very angry at you because you were showing him Sports Illustrated covers where he lost fights. Has there ever been an interview where you were scared or nervous or like, oh, man, I'm going down a road that could lead to bad places?
Well, not really. I mean, there were some people who I felt weren't really engaging in the interview. There's the Bill Belichick moment, you know, after he loses the Super Bowl after the perfect season. Until that game, I had that sideline and that report for the network to do that. And I wasn't rattled by OJ or the Simpson. He was a little bit imposing. He was more, contentious than intimidating, and he was very much in denial. But I do think that Mike Tyson, I was a little rattled because this is a guy we knew who could snap, and he had just gotten out of prison, and obviously bit Holyfield's ear in the ring. And so being at his house for that interview, when I upset, he was fine in the interview, and then he all of a sudden just clicked and lunged kind of towards me, and it's a good thing he was restrained. So in that flash of a moment, I thought maybe he was, if he got a hold of me, I had no chance. So, but that's really the only time. There were other moments, you know, the earthquake World Series and the Olympic bombing, where you're just concerned about other things. But it's funny, you know, the job, when you're in focus for the job, that's all you're really concerned about. And until other things around you affect you more closely. And so that's kind of the way I've always operated.
Chris Myers is joining us. The award-winning sportscaster. He's got a new book out that deserves a wow and so many moments from your career, Chris. And, you know, we mentioned you've been there through so many of these tent poles of sports history and just history in and of itself. You know, you're talking about OJ, Mike Tyson, Loma Prieta earthquake, Olympic bombing, also the race where Dale Earnhardt tragically passed away when you're working for Fox and covering NASCAR. Dale Earnhardt wasn't just a sports icon. He was a American icon. What do you remember from that terrible day?
Yeah, you know, Maggie, that's interesting because if you saw that Think about it. He was doing his sport live. So if that happened in any other, you know, think of an NBA, the guy top of the or professional football and on the field or in the moment on the court for that to happen like that, it was jolting and it was difficult. It was our first as a broadcast, the network, our first Daytona 500. And I'd gotten to interview him a few times even when I was at ESPN. But the hardest part for personally for me doing that post race show was. The analysts that I was working with had all really grown up with Dale Earnhardt and had raced against him or worked with him and competed. And they were really like family to him. So for me, I saw them and we couldn't announce right away. They knew from their experience when he hit the wall, we've seen other drivers walk away. But they could tell by the reaction of what was going on the track that his life was gone and we couldn't announce it. And so obviously the NASCAR and the family and the hospital, everybody went there and say, so I had to kind of watch them deal with this. We couldn't tell the audience it was official, just that it looks bad, but watching them kind of crumble in grief all around me was a very difficult thing. And then having to relay to the audience as much as we could. And then once it was announced, the coverage of it, was a very difficult thing. Shocking. You know, you go to a sporting event. That's why this is a little Forrest Gumpian in terms of the book. I mean, I got into sports for all the fun reasons that we do. And then there were quite a few of those that you mentioned that turned into bigger than life, bigger than sports news events, but you still got to cover them and you still got to report them to people. And that's always been a unique challenge when they popped up.
I think people wonder that. They think, oh, we're in the sandbox of life. And, you know, 90% of the time we are in the sandbox of life. But
right.
Sometimes the real stuff hits pretty hard. Chris Myers is joining us. He's got a new book, That Deserves a Wow. All right, on a lighter note, Tom Brady, first year as a broadcaster with Fox. I mean, he gets thrown into the deep end, Chris, with the number one broadcasting crew. What do you think he can do to take the next step? Like, clearly he's got some of the basics down. He's got some of the fundamentals. He's getting better every week. To take that next step, using all of your career and all the knowledge that you have, what do you think Brady can do to take? Because he would want to know. You know, he's the guy who is always improving. What can he do to take the next step?
Yeah, and that's the thing. He is a workaholic. I mean, whatever he's doing, I know he's doing a lot of different things in retirement, but people should know, and he doesn't brag about this, and it hasn't been publicized a lot, but he's put a lot of time and energy from when he first retired into some broadcasters would, as they were playing, or I should say players, they would ease into broadcasting part-time. So he's so focused that he wanted to finish his playing career and then during that stretch work on the broadcast part, simulated games, his own voice coach, whatever other kinds of things that, and I you know, some of that is his information, but I know that he works at everything. We saw that in football, and he does have that perfectionist type of approach. So, you know, the biggest thing, it sounds like a coach here, but the reps, right? The more you do, and you could do simulated games, but the real games in real situations. And Kevin Burkhardt's great to work with in terms of setting him up or guiding him or letting him be him. His knowledge is what needs to come out and in the succinct manner. So, you know, the biggest thing probably too is sometimes, you know, your voice has to cut through. That's the other thing I think a lot of when guys do games, if you're in the studio, people see you and your voice, you don't have to project as much, but it has to be natural. So in the game, your voice has to cut through the crowd noise. He did that when he was barking out signals, obviously, on an audible to call a play. But you have to kind of do that naturally, and your voice doesn't sound like you're yelling or you're being artificial. So that's probably, you know, when I've watched the games, I do think, in fairness, he's gotten better. I mean, it's rare when you start at the top. It's like putting in a rookie quarterback into a Super Bowl game and say, go. And we'll see. I think people will see once he gets to the Super Bowl in February on Fox, when he calls that game, he'll be a lot more comfortable. And you won't be thinking about, you won't be analyzing his broadcast work. You'll be analyzing his content. And I think that's what he really wants, what he actually says in the game. Because I think he said some interesting things when you watch the game that go, that if anybody else says them, yeah, they're all right. But if Brady says them, you listen a little bit more.
Chris, sorry, we're up against the break, but real quick, there's some, you know, some personal stuff, some painful stuff in the book. What's the reaction been? You don't seem like a person who always puts your life out there so easily. Has it been a bit nerve-wracking to have people read the book and really get to know you more?
Yeah, Andrew, I thought it was important if I was going to talk about interviewing other people and their lives and how they reacted to things, I had to at least address that. My family's very private. I've always been, you know, the game is the thing, the player, the guest is, they're the story, and you keep it moving along. But because the loss of my son at a young age, before I went actually to the Daytona 500, the outpouring of emotion, support, people at ESPN that I'd worked with in the past, obviously, the Bill Murray's family show. It's athletes, coaches, people I had never even met in the sports world that were very supportive. And I talk about the detail. And I want people to know that if you hit a dark moment like that, something that's really tragic for you or your family, there's more help out there than you realize if you need it. And they're there. That I'll always be grateful for that, because the sports world, the media world, we're a tight group. It's an important fraternity, and you don't have to lean on each other much. But when you do, it's good to know they're there.
Chris, congratulations on the book. That deserves a wow. You can get it wherever books are sold now. It's fantastic. It's like going back through a sports chronicle, which was really from someone who was right there and had a front row seat and was dictating the action to all of us. So thank you so much and congrats.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you. Keep up the good work on the show. I really enjoy you guys.
Yeah. Hope to see you soon, Chris. Right. Thank you.
See you, Andrew.
Appreciate you, Chris.
All right, take care.
Bye, Maggie. Hope to see you in New Orleans. Okay. We've got a lot more to do, including the massive game tonight. Green Bay Packers on the road to face the Lions. We dive into it next. Welcome back. Go ahead.
Oh, I say this portion of the show is sponsored by the new 2025 Hyundai Tucson Hybrid that has class-leading advanced safety features like the available blind spot view monitor to make your ride more enjoyable. Sorry, Maggie, I cut you off.
I didn't mean to step on you like that.
Wow, we usually do that. I'm like, okay.
Well-oiled machine around here.
What?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, it's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. We all know sleepers can win you championships, but finding these guys takes time. That's where the Sleeper King comes in. Let me do all the research so you don't have to. Every week, I'm going to break down which sleepers you need to pick up off the waiver wire and which surprise deep sleepers could help you win the week. Every episode, just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
No, I'm just kidding.
Let's get to Aaron Rodgers.
What the f*** is Aaron Rodgers up to today?
You never know.
You really don't.
You really don't, which is why we created this segment. So yesterday we brought you the story of Aaron Rodgers' upcoming Netflix documentary where the trailer implies that we're going to watch him go on some kind of ayahuasca trip. So you got that coming. Mark your calendars. Yesterday, though, Rodgers was talking to the media. Now, we got to back up one day. Pat McAfee show, Rodgers was asked by one of the McAfee guys, about Chicago, about what the next coach needs to do to make sure they maximize Caleb Williams. And Rodgers had a pretty good answer. He said, it doesn't really matter if it's an offensive guy or a defensive guy. What matters is the coach and the GM need the support of ownership. and he brought up Dan Campbell and how Dan Campbell took over the Lions and they were 3-13-1 and then started the next year 1-6. And still, ownership backed him, and look at how much it's paying off for them now. They're the Super Bowl favorite. So Rodgers was asked, like, you know, what do you think about the Jets ownership? Are they giving some kind of support? Is anyone telling you that they want you back? So let's hear from Rodgers.
A lot of people have, yeah. Not the people who are making those decisions. but there'll be a conversation at some point. And listen, if they say they want to move on, that's great. Fantastic, you know. But if they say they want me to play, then I'll consider it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when the coach and the GM have both been fired, and there's a story that came out that the owner wanted you benched after the Broncos game.
Right.
Yeah, that the people who are responsible for this decision have not publicly weighed in on Rodgers, and that would be Woody Johnson.
Yeah, and also, though, there's this weird thing where Aaron is clearly close to Woody's brother, Chris, and he actually had to clarify a report that he never went to dinner with Woody, he went to dinner with Chris. So I don't know what all that means. It does seem, based on that, like, he's not on the same page with ownership. Isn't that what you took away?
Definitely not. Yeah. Rodgers, though, says he would like to return to New York, though.
Yeah, I mean, I just redid my house here in Jersey, so my goal was to play a few more years here, but we'll see. You know, I'd like to be healthy. I'd like to end on my feet, and then I'd like to play well, and I'd like to feel like I'm wanted back. If not, you know, that's, again, I will not be offended. I won't be upset. I'll be so thankful either way, whatever happens here.
I think he's kind of saying, like, hey, if you guys want to cut me, like, it's good. No hard feelings. I'm not going to trash you on the way out. You don't trash me on the way out. And maybe we can just sort of part ways here, like this whole thing never happened.
What does it remind you of? Who did the exact same exit from the Jets? It's Brett Favre 2.0. He's already probably looking at offensive coordinators around the league. I think, yeah, he's like, hey, if you want to cut me, I'll go play with some Shanahan acolyte. I don't know. I just feel like, I don't think he's retiring.
Okay, well, he had something to say about that. He said he's going to take his time to decide on football for next year.
I got to be healthy mentally, physically, and then there's got to be interest on both sides. And if that's not the case, then I'll look at other options. But first, I'll think about whether I actually want to play or not. It usually takes a good, you know, month to get away from it, which I'll do the first month, and then see what happens.
You know, often we joke that the person who talks about retirement is going to play for 9 more years.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, he's not, what is he? He just turned 41.
Yesterday, two days ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's old, but Tom Brady, obviously being a model, was still good till he was 43. So I think he could play again. I think he's going to be much healthier next year.
I'm just going to say this. I know that Woody Johnson is not a popular owner amongst the Jets faithful. If Rodgers goes somewhere else next year and balls out,
which will happen,
there might be whatever fans can do, they will do. Sell the team chants, more people burning their season tickets. Whatever you can do as a fan to get retribution on an owner, you will do.
That's the most predictable outcome of all time.
Coming up, Lomas Brown's going to join us. Let's talk some Lions.